How long have we got before our robot overlords take over?
Machines doing all of that. Well, I think it can help direct and generate possibilities.
Anyone, anywhere in the world has the capacity to have an absolutely brilliant idea, but the capacity to grow that idea into a successful business. You can't do that alone.
Douglas Adams was almost like a Bible of when I was a student in the early 80s.
This is one of the most exciting things that I've got to work on. Let's
go. Hello and welcome to the Creative Tech Podcast, where we discuss how technology can help you to be more creative. This podcast is made by the National Centre for Creativity enabled by AI, which is a bit of a mouthful, so we call it CBAE for short. It's presented by the director of CBAE, Professor Neil Maiden. Neil, who's in the studio today?
Thanks, Sam. Today's guest is an expert small business consultant, helps companies with strategy development and innovation management, is a former head of data at Research England, which is part of UKRI, the UK's research and innovation agency, and he's about to become one of our collaborators as we work together on a project evolving Business Sparks, a new interactive digital tool for business owners and managers. Welcome to the Creative Tech Podcast, Hamish Palpine, director at Auxentia. How are you?
Thanks, Neil. Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me on. Doing well today. Currently down in Bath, where I live.
Excellent. So you've got lovely views of rolling hills outside the window.
Fair proportion of clouds too, but yeah, few hills in poking out
English
in between the clouds.
Summer. Yep. Okay, English summer. So we're going to do things a little differently today from our normal podcast format. I'm going to ask you some questions, Hamish, and you're going to ask me some. So we're effectively interviewing each other. Is that fine with you?
Sounds good to me.
Perfect. Well, let me start off with one of the important questions of the summer. Have you been to the cinema recently?
I've not.
Okay. Well, if you were to go, would it be Barbie or Oppenheimer?
I've not actually seen either. I've been too busy on the beach and in bars and that kind of thing. But I think I'd probably go Barbie. I've heard good reports from my daughter. And I'm not sure I've got the concentration span to sit through 3 hours of Oppenheimer. So I'll go Team Pink.
All right, Team Pink it is. Mind you, your reason for not going to the cinema is fine. It's the summer. We should be out on the beach and having a quiet
making the most of every second of dry weather.
Exactly, exactly. So you work at Auxentia, where you're director. Can you explain a little bit about what Auxentia does and what it is?
Yeah, so Auxentia is a specialist innovation consultancy. We started life as an operating division of Oxford University Innovation, which commercializes the research from the University of Oxford. And we provide consultancy training and program management to a really wide range of clients. So corporate clients, universities, governments and foundations. So we're often working with innovators, you know, academics who want to start their own company or other innovators who may have an idea they want to bring to market. And our kind of tagline is that we bring ideas to life.
It's a nice tagline. You frame yourself as an innovation consultant, a global innovation consultant. So how do you become one of those? What was your path to getting there?
Well, I would say just sort of thinking about all of my colleagues, I think we've all taken very, very different paths, actually. Mm. My own was, my first degree was in engineering, and I did a PhD in a kind of related discipline. Spent a small amount of time as a postdoctoral researcher before moving into university project management. So I tend to work at the interface between the university and the academic research and very large industry, typically in the engineering sector. And from there, I worked at the universities of Bath and then Bristol, and then actually moved to Research England, as you mentioned earlier, Neil, part of UK Research and Innovation. And there I was responsible for funding and policy to do with commercialization of research. And that's what led me to Auxentia. I don't think there is a typical route into this type of work, but that was mine.
Oh, it's good to hear that individual story to inspire others.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So I suspect your job is quite diverse. What's the best bit of it?
Without question, it's the time we spend directly with clients. So going out, working with innovators and seeing how our help makes a tangible difference. So to give you an example of that, one of the programs we're involved with is the Royal Academy of Engineering's Leaders in Innovation Fellows scheme. So this trains innovators from all over the world, predominantly in low and middle income countries. I had the privilege to fly out to Vietnam earlier this year and to help a cohort of innovators in country to really kind of, you know, explore their business model, improve how they're pitching, think about their strategy to internationalize and to move their businesses out of Vietnam and into a global market. We were there training for a week, and you know, the difference, for example, in their ability to pitch for investment from the Monday to the Friday was just fantastic and inspiring, and it's, you know, made the long-haul flight in economy worthwhile.
No, good. It's lovely to have impact. It's interesting to hear that you work with SMEs and startups all over the world. Are there interesting regional differences or similarities that SMEs face, or challenges that they have to overcome?
So firstly, I guess I would say that wherever we've worked, I think the human capacity to innovate and to come up with good ideas is universal. And I don't think that depends on, you know, where you are in the world. I think the difference is the ecosystem that people find themselves in. So, for example, we're in quite a privileged position in the UK in terms of access to venture capital finance, in terms of having a quite a well-developed and relatively stable kind of regulatory regime, in terms of having good access to infrastructure, all of these kind of ecosystem elements, you know, relatively, you know, I guess it's all relative, but relatively stable government, for example, a reasonably well-developed economy, a very well-developed legal framework. And what we see, and what we've done quite a lot of work with all over the world, is what are all these different ecosystem elements in different parts of the world? And I think that's the real differentiator is, you know, anyone anywhere in the world has the capacity to have an absolutely brilliant idea, but the capacity to execute that and to grow that idea and to make it into a successful business. You can't do that alone. You need access to all those elements. And that's what really varies.
Mm-hmm. Other things that you can do, which are in terms of advice that are often about how you can improve the ecosystems. Are you dealing with other governments or the equivalents of UKRI as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I'd say one thing you absolutely cannot do, though, is lift and shift an ecosystem and say what you need to do is copy the oft-quoted example, Silicon Valley. You can't pick up 60-plus years of history and plonk it into another country, another cultural, another economic context and expect that to work. So I think there's a lot of lessons that that you can transfer. There's a lot of good practice. There's a lot of connections and learning you can make. But it's really important not to say that this is the one best model and you should adopt it. That just will not work.
Useful advice. Well, thank you, Hamish.
That's okay. So I guess in the spirit of this interview, let me ask you a few questions, Neil. So firstly, the most important one, you asked me about Barbie. Douglas Adams or Terry Pratchett?
I'm going to have to go Douglas Adams because I've never read any Terry Pratchett, whereas Douglas Adams was almost like a Bible of when I was a student in the early 80s. So I have read Hitchhikers and the follow-on, the Dirk, what's he called? Dirk Gently, is that right? I think that's what he's called. The detective. So it's Douglas Adams for me.
Great. And if somebody works in AI, how long have we got before our robot overlords take over?
Fair question. One that gets covered a lot in the press. I would say longer than the naysayers in the press are suggesting. I think there's a tendency at the moment for us to both overestimate and underestimate the abilities of AI. We're making, I think, fantastic progress in very narrow vertical sectors in which you can see AI, at least with the capability to automate a lot of work at the moment. And I think for the average person in the street, they don't understand the speed and the state of that progress. But then at the same time, you know, what most people think of as AI, which they get from science fiction, they think of this kind of the artificial general intelligence concept. I think there's a long way to go. I don't think the overlords will be running our society. I think the most insightful thing I read on this entire subject was by John Norton, who writes an insightful column in the Guardian newspaper. And I think about a month ago, he wrote that the future of AI will be mundane. And I would buy into that because essentially AI will be incorporated into the office suite. It'll be sort of in the background of the operating systems. It'll be embedded in our Oyster cards or our credit cards when we travel. So it'll almost become invisible. And I think that's what he means by mundane. I'm not saying the effects will be mundane, but I think the idea of AI being this sort of discrete, separate entity that will be sort of living on the 50th floor of the office block and we have trouble accessing it is a myth. It'll just be embedded in everything that we use and do. There's a debate about whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I think that's my take on it at the moment.
And you can always just unplug the computer, right?
Of course.
So can you tell me a bit more about the Centre for Creativity enabled by AI, CBAE? What's that all about?
Yeah, I suppose it was a vision that Research England funding enabled me to bring about 4 years ago. Me and my research team, we'd been researching digital creativity tools and the nature of them and trying to push them outside of their traditional bubble of academic research and the creative industries. And so we built a number of digital tools that support creative work in manufacturing, social care for older people, these kinds of sectors, which are not seen as creative, but of course have creative problem solving in them. And the main challenge, and you probably know this from your days as a project manager, when the money runs out at the end of the research project, when you've got a first proof of concept and a little bit of evaluation data, then you have to stop and you jump onto the next tool, typically in a different domain. And what Research England enabled us to do with its development fund was to build over 4 years a platform in which we could try and make impact with this. So a substantial move towards productization. So what we're trying to do is, and I think what we have done, is build a digital and service platform for delivering what we call creativity on demand to people in different business sectors. They can use our interactive tools and our back-end, more traditional AI tools in order to explore ideas about their business models and strategies around how to coach sort of top-end football teams, how to design for a more circular economy, these kinds of areas which our tools are developed to support. So that's really what it's about, making impact in this space.
And in your opinion, why is creativity important for business? I mean, those things you're describing, they sound like, you know, quite rational, you know, kind of things. Where does creativity fit into this in the sense that most people would understand it, you know, having these sparks, these ideas?
Yeah, I think they're sort of going back to the typical person in the street. They tend to associate creativity still with the arts. And I would distinguish between creativity in artistic sense and creative problem solving. And business, every day, business people have to solve problems, small problems, big problems, long-term problems. And if you accept that some of those problems require solutions that might need to be novel as well as useful, i.e. something new within the business, then in technical terms, you're engaged in creative thinking because the new business idea, the new business plan, the new approach to selling something is creative, at least in the context of your business. So I would argue that creativity is central to most problem solving in business, and therefore it's central to business itself. I think we need to get away from the idea that creativity is a rare and sort of big act that happens occasionally by creative leaders, the Steve Jobs of the world. I'm a big champion of everyday creativity, how we can get people to think slightly creatively in a slightly different way every day. And it becomes a sort of default setting for us rather than just reaching for the same solutions all the time. So that's how it is. I think it's intrinsic to future business practice.
Yeah, that certainly resonates with the work we've done. Often, you know, when we're working with innovators, it's not about us telling them, no, you should do it this way or that way. It's almost like a kind of, you know, coaching conversation to get them to think, how can we evolve in, you know, you might call it creative, I might use the word innovative way. And, you know, products and services and companies who are successful are innovative. I can certainly relate to that. So I guess, though, can machines really help with this very kind of human skill, like critical thinking, like this creative problem solving? What role can a language model or an AI tool play in that?
There's clearly a role, because you can break down the act of creative thinking, creative problem solving into several steps. One key value that we hold within CBay and we build into our products and services is augmentation, not automation. So we're trying to support people to be more creative rather than trying to automate it. And I think there's been a lot of upsides of the generative AI explosion over the last 6 months. But one of the downsides is people tend to think of it as an automated process. You open your prompt chat, you type something in, and you get an answer. That's not necessarily being that creative. There's very little that you take away from it. You haven't learned. And I think there's a flip side between creative problem solving and creative learning. That you're trying to encourage people to learn whilst they're problem solving, so the new knowledge can be reused again. Because if it's not learned, then it's lost and they haven't really gone forward. So what can machines do in all of that? Well, I think it can help direct and generate possibilities. So machines are very good at search and discovering. And typically, we businesses have large information assets. They're unable to manipulate them. In fact, I would argue that many business reports are write-only reports that very rarely get read. And of course, machines can make sense of those, you know, on a large scale quickly, and they can interrogate them for gaps, opportunities, ideas, and then put them forward to users, almost like a sort of more creative recommendation system. So they're not necessarily training you in the soft skills, but they can direct you and speed up that process of some aspects of creative problem solving that then people can reflect on and learn from. So I think we're trying to encourage people, maybe not explicitly in our products, but to be reflective and therefore learn some creative skills from the use of the tools.
So there's definitely that idea that it's a kind of AI augmented or human in the loop kind of system.
Very much. We are passionate around what is called human-centered AI, and it's about building AI around the human rather than having the human in the loop. So I would actually push that it flips them, the passive and active in that sentence.
Yeah, and that's kind of reassuring for me as a consultant that I might still have a job at the end of this.
Oh, absolutely. The user, one of our other principles is the user has to be in control of the tech at all time. The tech can never run ahead of what the user wants it to do.
Fantastic. Thank you.
I think it's about time I ask you some questions again. I realize I was almost into lecture mode there. We're about to start working together to evolve a co-creative AI tool to accelerate high-growth companies. The tech we're developing is called Business Sparks, and it guides users to explore ideas, develop different approaches, and discover more innovative business insights. So Hamish, how's this going to be useful to Auxentia, do you think?
I have to say, Neil, I'm super excited about this. This is one of the most exciting things that I've got to work on in my time in Auxentia. In terms of how we think this might be useful and why we were so keen on this collaboration is that for any consultancy, not just what we do, but any kind of people-based business, the cost of the services is basically a function of our time. The more time we spend on something, the more it costs the client. So I think there's a huge opportunity if we can use AI to work more intelligently, to work smarter, for AI to augment our practice and do more quickly, it's cheaper. And that sounds a weird thing to say as a business, you know, that we can charge less, that's great. But the exciting thing for me is that what we see working all over the world is that there are real global inequalities and there's a very different ability of innovators to access support in different parts of the world. So, you know, a lot of the work we do in Latin America, in Southeast Asia, in other low and middle income countries, at the moment we would do through our foundation. So we have a not-for-profit sister company, the Auxentia Foundation, which enables us to work with people who ordinarily wouldn't have the ability to pay. Breaking that link between our cost and our time, how does that address global inequality in innovation and entrepreneurship? Mm. And how can we use that to reach many more people in the UK and globally?
Now, it's fascinating how we've gone from something that is, I would call, a co-creative AI tool, and immediately you're repositioning it as a tool for more cost-effective work, productivity, which in turn enables you to deliver innovation to those who are perhaps less able to do it. So there's kind of a value chain there that you've identified coming out of creativity through to your different business objectives.
I guess that's it, really. This is an issue which is very, very common to lots of consultancies, is the amount of information we have to keep on top of. So part of the time that we would spend is exploring and keeping abreast of new developments, thinking about evaluating different business models, different markets, different technologies, and thinking how do they apply to our clients and how can we utilize this and integrate this knowledge and information into our own knowledge base and then deploy it for the benefit of our clients. So I think there's definitely another use case. It's not just helping us to work more effectively, but it's helping us to keep on top of trends and new developments more effectively. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can't, with the best will in the world, possibly keep on top of tens of thousands of journal articles and Harvard Business Review articles and blogs and podcasts that talk mm-hmm. about all of this stuff. So again, you know, it's another opportunity that if we can more effectively integrate this sort of new cutting edge emerging thinking into our work, that helps our clients. And that, again, it, mm-hmm. it makes it more cost effective. It makes the outcome better. It means we can reach more people.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So you've come to us for a bespoke business solution. You didn't think of going straight to OpenAI and just using their established large language models such as GPT or their competitors. So what is it that you're looking for that isn't out there at the moment in the AI landscape?
We have as a company thoughts, you know, as all consultancies have, is, you know, how can we use AI? But for me, something like ChatGPT, the large and obvious issue is how those models are developed, being trained on existing open source information. How does that really give us an edge? There's also a huge concern around confidentiality, that, you know, we're working with innovators. They may not have protected their ideas. They may be at a very early stage of their business. We are absolutely not prepared to put prompts into chatbots using publicly available information where our prompts may be used for future queries. There's just a huge confidentiality and ethical issue with that. So we can't really use them in that way. Also, everyone can use those. So what competitive advantage would it really confer for us? Mm-hmm. And I think the usual rule applies here, rubbish in, rubbish out. So unless we really know how to craft meaningful ways of interacting with ChatGPT, I think it could do more harm than good.
No, I agree with a lot of those points. In terms of, you know, the information that you guys need to keep on top of, is it largely internal information that you have, or is it a mix of internal and external?
I'd say it's a mix. It's more kind of external. So, you know, so for example, if we're trying to help an innovator refine a business model with a particular new technology in a particular sector, we need to know about the technology, we need to know about the sector, we need to know about the competitive landscape, how they're positioned within it. And that information all comes from outside of the company, and then we have to use our skills, knowledge, you know, that we've built up over previous projects, very sort of proprietary knowledge or proprietary tools and techniques that we might then apply to that publicly available knowledge about the sector, about the competitors, about the technology.
So what are you hoping for from our first 5-month project? I think it's a 5 or 6 month, 6 month project.
Five or six months. So we identified two kind of main use cases for this. One is around the real core of what we do, which is helping startups, SMEs, you know, small, early stage, high growth potential businesses, and seeing whether the kind of normal intervention we do, looking at their pitches, their business models, their plans, seeing whether Business Sparks can help us do that quicker and more effectively, more cost effectively, and in a way that we can scale that more effectively to help more companies. And that's a real absolute key use case for us. Mm-hmm. And I think although our working with an individual client may not take that long, if this can even cut the time by 25 or 30%, that could have a real difference in terms of our ability to scale this or our ability to work in certain low and middle income countries. So that would be really valuable. You know, going back to your earlier point, Neil, this may be not a revolution, but it's just lots of good incremental improvements. And I think they can really add up over the course of lots of small interventions with lots of these small, high growth companies. I think going back to the kind of keeping on top of trends and how we make sure that our practice is grounded in the latest thinking, academic thinking and thinking from the business world. The second use case is more around how this might help us think about our training. A big part of what we do is training. A lot of that training is based on our skills and experience that we build up from consultancy and, you know, that our consultants' individual backgrounds and skills and experience. But again, with the best will in the world, we can't possibly read every single relevant article. It takes a huge amount of time to think about what's the client's real requirements. How can we translate that into really effective training? We see an opportunity for Business Sparks to help us look at how we structure our training, look at how we integrate new ideas into our training in a coherent way, without having to trawl through and make sense of all this disparate information that's out there.
Well, you'll be happy to know we've outlined already a sort of information and creative thinking pipeline from the information asset inputs right through to the the interactive outputs in Business Sparks, and I'd be happy to show you a first version of that quite soon. And it's interesting because we're seeing similar overarching needs from other kinds of businesses in different sectors that we're working with in the design and manufacturing sector. So there's clearly a broader problem to be solved here, of which yours is one particular and interesting instance.
Yeah, I'm sure businesses all require a viable business model. They all have products or services to sell. There's a lot of, as you know, at a very generic level, features that are similar. As a consultancy, I guess we're taking that sort of meta level view, and we're not thinking how can we use this for our business, but we're thinking about how can we use it for the multitude of clients that we work with. So yeah, I'm not surprised that at many levels there's similar challenges to be overcome, albeit, you know, you're going to need tweaks in the model to be able to do that really effectively.
Of course. Stay tuned to our new Innovate UK project between Oxentia and Cbay. No doubt we'll be talking about its outcomes at some point in early 2024. But I'm going to move this podcast on, Hamish. I'm going to take you to our regular feature, because at Cbay, our purpose is to build AI technology that supports creative problem solving. We think of products as providing creativity on demand. So in this regular feature, I have three questions to test your creativity on demand. And hopefully none of them are around Barbie. So first of all, what is the single most important thing you require in order to be creative?
Oof, gosh, it's tricky. I'm going to go with other people.
Okay.
So sort of, yeah, just reflecting on my own sort of creative process, I think there's some part of it where I start just thinking about it on my own, but I can't think of a single example where anything I come up with hasn't been improved when I've socialized it with other people. I've used them to bat ideas around, you know, we've worked in a collaborative way. It's very much how we work at Oxentia. So I'll go with other people.
Other people it is. That's a good answer. I like that one. And that's one that I would also support. So secondly, if you could create any app that could do anything real or imaginary, what would it be?
I spent one or two days of my recent annual leave with the annual battle that is tax returns. So I guess one thing I'd love is something that just tracks all aspects of my financial life. So I don't even have to think about my tax return. Perhaps that's a bit intrusive, though. So probably more realistically, I'd go with something, you know, again, reflecting on our work all over the world. I'd like an app that gives universal access to as high quality as an education as you get in a top university anywhere in the world for free. So I guess some people would say, well, MOOCs exist. I'm not really sure they've lived up to their potential. How can we evolve that kind of massively distributed sort of model of really high quality education, not just like short online, often low quality courses?
Now, it's fascinating how we in the higher education sector really haven't solved that problem. We haven't even got close to finding a solution to large scale education in the developing world. And last question, the third one, is if you could remove one thing from the world in order to make humans more creative, what would it be? What would go in the bin?
Well, I guess reflecting on my other people being the kind of essential ingredient to creativity, I think that probably the biggest barrier to that is laptops in meetings. So they would go in the bin for the duration of meetings.
Okay. Well, I'll notice for our kickoff meeting, you have asked for a demo of the software. And unless you want me to do it through interpretive mime, there probably will be a laptop in the meeting.
That's all right. As long as you've not got your email and Teams and Messenger all open at the same time.
I shall make sure they're closed. I've learned an important lesson on this podcast. So thank you, Hamish. But I agree. I think technology often gets in the way of the focus of meetings. Although, of course, technology has enabled us to meet much more effectively without having to all find a meeting room and pile into it as well as we all sit here.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think it has a huge ability to kind of fragment our thinking as well. You know, if I want to do any creative work or focused work, I have to shut about half a dozen apps down before I don't get distracted every 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. I think that splitting of your time and your concentration is a huge issue when it comes to quality work.
Indeed,
I agree. So that was pretty mean of you, Neil. So I'm going to turn the tables and ask you the same three questions, if I may. So for you, what's the single thing in order to be creative then?
Well, the good thing is that I've asked this question so many times, I've actually had quite a lot of opportunity to think about what my answers might be. And interesting, I think some of mine reflect what you've just said. I think the most important thing for me to be creative is space to think. Not having too many channels open, giving myself uninterrupted time, going for a walk, all of that is space to think, because I need not just the active thinking, but the reflective thinking, the incubating. I mean, there is a model of creativity that has incubation as a activity at the heart of it. And I think that's absolutely important. And I feel that modern working life squeezes that out, not just technologies, but the rota of meetings. I've been in organizations where there seem to be meetings from 10 o'clock till 5. And I'm just thinking, these people are just moving between meetings all day. When do they think? Mm. And it's utterly destructive. So space to think. And I think the pandemic and working from home has taught us that. I started this practice before the pandemic, and I think my thinking quality has improved as a result. Other colleagues might disagree, but
the interesting side effect and possible benefit of lockdown is that kind of enforced isolation, for sure. That certainly resonates with me as well. I guess that the problem is we're often so busy that kind of rumination time happens between 3 and 5 o'clock in the morning. Then I wake up with a great idea that I have to write down at some point in the small hours.
Well, I have the advantage of relatively frequent commuting, traveling. So I often find that's quite a good place when phones get switched off and so on, or there's no signal. So I tend to. Travel is excellent for that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And that's one benefit of living in Bath and working in Oxford. I have a nice long commute to put some music on and think things over, for sure. Moving to the app then, what would your ideal, real or imaginary app be?
Yeah, I think about this. I mean, obviously, any of our own tools are perfect, and I would recommend them to anybody who wants to be creative, design sparks, sports sparks, business sparks, and any other kind of sparks that we develop. But for me, I think an app that can translate my thoughts and my scribbles into written text. So when I'm out walking, my ideas tend to fall over each other. They tumble out. And I can't write them down fast enough. And typing actually then slows down the thinking process. Any typing slows down the creative flow. So my flow is faster than my ability to document. And it happens in short bursts. So I need something that I can plug into my ear, and it just turns them into sensible notes so that I don't then have to stop, lose the flow, write it all down before I've forgotten it. And then, of course, if I write it down in my notebook on the plane, I can't bloody read it because my handwriting. And so all sorts of problems around that. So it's not losing lots of good ideas that come to me. I don't know. And no one else has said that, which I'm quite surprised at. But that's mine.
It sounds a bit like a Douglas Adams universal translator, just with a recording facility.
It does, actually. Good point.
Great. And what's one thing that can get in the bin when it comes to creativity?
It's got to be social media. Social media is the killer of human creativity in this age. Coming back to my point about space and what you said as well, is if you have lots of social media channels open, they're constantly interrupting you. They're cluttering you up with unimportant information. And they are distracting your cognitive process. And actually, you mentioned Douglas Adams has come up twice now. But if I remember in Hitchhikers, there was a race of telepathic people. And because they could read all of their own thoughts, the only way they could stop wars and essentially killing each other because of all the jealousies and dislikes, because they could read all their own thoughts, was to engage in insane, continuous babble. So basically, they just spoke utter drivel 24 hours a day to each other. In order to stop the thinking process, which would lead to misunderstandings. I think Douglas Adams was 50 years ahead of the curve here. He foresaw social media, and that's what it is. It's largely utter trivia, stopping us from thinking about the big things in life. Yeah, I'm not on social media at all anymore, and I think quality of my time has improved. It's going to make me unpopular with certain listeners, but never mind.
No, fantastic. Deep thoughts there. Thank you very much.
That's okay. So listen, Hamish, it was lovely to talk to you. I think we've identified some interesting potential themes and exploration of how our kind of co-creative AI tools can support not just innovation, but more cost-effective work, greater productivity, creating resources to help other businesses in other parts of the world be more innovative. So is there any sort of final message you'd like to sort of give to our listeners about how your work and how our work together might go forward?
Just to reiterate how excited we are about this, how grateful we are for the Innovate UK funding. And I think, you know, genuinely, without that funding and the funding call, you know, that serendipitous meeting that led to the collaborative project, which, you know, ultimately got funded, it really just wouldn't have happened. So that's been fantastic. I think the other thing I'm really excited about, actually, is Auxentia being able to collaborate directly with a university on an innovative thing. You know, we help people, you know, sometimes people like you have early stage ideas who you want to get, you know, out of the lab into the market. And now we're doing it ourselves. We're walking the talk, which is something we pride ourselves on, having that lived experience of actually doing this. You know, a lot of us have backgrounds in this area. I always say we're not a training company, we're a consultancy that does training, for example, because we always have that experience. So that's what makes it really an incredibly exciting project for me. And thanks very much for the opportunity.
Oh, thank you. I think with all of this expertise on knowledge exchange and impact, we really can't fail, can we?
Well, we'll try not to.
Exactly. Okay, so thank you very much, Hamish McAlpine, Director of Auxentia. And thank you to everybody who's listening to this CBAE podcast, our regular series of conversations around creativity, tech and business. Please take time to like the podcast and leave a review. It really does make a difference to us. You can also follow us on Twitter at CBAE or on LinkedIn, Creativity Enabled by AI.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.